better throw some respect on my name. Gotta remind these folks on the daily, cause I ain't really been myself as of lately. My mind's evolving and my heart is changing, starting to see the world how it should be. It's positively sweet.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Nelson from Boys to Men, the new and approved podcast. Come to y'all from the Leah Gibson Foundation, where we'll be residing for now on. And I got a special guest on today, none other than District 3
County Commissioner,
Lumen Mays. Welcome to the show, Mr. Mays.
Well, thank you for having me.
Man, thank you for showing up. How do you, I see you did a tour already of the building. What's your thoughts so far about the Leah Gibson Foundation?
The Gibson Foundation, to me, is awesome. You know, being a commissioner, you get so many solicitations and so many requests for funding and help. Most of the time, it's just people talking in theory about what they could do, or we want to help the children, or we want to get some money to do this program. What I like about this, they're doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's actually something you can see, touch, and feel. And, you know, for Ms. Gibson to honor her daughter and for her husband, you know, to be from Mariana. I mean, at times we met many, many years ago in Mariana in an elevator, but they're actually doing it, and they're doing it first class. And so, you know, they're going to find support from me. They're going to find support, you know, from whatever resources we have, because they're actually doing the work. And that's what's important. If we want to change lives and change communities, is that you have to actually get out and do it.
The work.
So she's invested her own money, her own resources, without getting paid. That shows that this is her ministry and her passion and not her job.
Boy, Ms. Mays, you have your second up life. You could have been a pastor, you know that, right?
I used to hang with my father was a pastor, but I don't know, man. You know, sometimes I get angry and cuss every now and then.
Hey, look, we all human. And look, even pastors make mistakes and they do the little cussing here and there, but they just might not try to expose that they do it, but look, it's all in good faith.
We all have a ministry. I think that God calls us to whatever ministry, whether it's in the pulpit, whether you're a school board member like Coach Williams, or whether you're a county commissioner. I'm a Little League coach, as you know, so I've been coaching Little League sports, and to me, that's ministry. Yeah. And so Ms. Gibson is doing ministry here. I mean, your ministry is whatever God calls you. It doesn't have to be in a church. It doesn't have to be in a synagogue. It doesn't have to be in a building. Jesus' ministry was in the highways and the byways, just helping folks. And so when you have people that's out helping the community, they have a ministry and they become ministers. And so it's minister of whatever gospel. It may be, you know, stop the violence. It may be for bereavement. It may be for feeding. It may be for homelessness. It may be for giving clothes. It may be for counseling. But I just think when you find your passion, it becomes your ministry and it becomes your life work. And whatever you've chosen to do in your purpose, you have to do it. And that's your ministry. And that's what I believe. You know, it's my ministry to want to help my community, particularly black and brown children who come from inner cities. Is the ministry that I think that God's called me to do. And, you know, I don't do it through a pulpit, or I don't do it through Wednesday night Bible study. I try to do it through Little League sports, and I try to do it through tutoring, and just simply, you know, through the work that I get the opportunity to serve as a county commissioner.
Yes, sir. So you said Little League and youth-wise, because I know that they're doing stuff with Malcolm Young right now, and I know that's going to be a hit on our community. So what's going to be the next thing to replace that in that type of community?
Well, you know, that's a misnomer. I mean, so I grew up, I started working at Malcolm Young when I was 12 years old.
Yeah.
So I kept the score clock and the books there, and then I ended up running Westside Athletics for the city, and then I ended up starting a Southern Youth Sports Association, which has about 800 children. Back in the days, Malcolm, because of 6th Avenue, 7th Avenue, 8th Avenue, and 9th, had a concentration of a lot of young black children. Because of gentrification and the exploration of moving people out of the neighborhood, you no longer have a concentration of, quite frankly, African Americans or poor people at Malcolm Young. And so community centers, in my opinion, should reflect the demographics and the character of the community. And so even when you look at Malcolm Young, you know, I'm not, you know, getting into the politics of whether it should have been demolished or not, but unfortunately the demographics of Malcolm Young has changed, just like they have in, you know, all of the inner city, particularly my district. When I got elected in my district, and Coach will tell you, I mean, and he's newly elected, I mean, we're 64, 60 plus percent African American, and now we're less than 40% African American. So, because what you've looked at is just the gentrification.
Yeah.
And so, when you go into a community center, in my opinion, if you see the parking lot full of cars, they're not addressing the needs of the community. So, for instance, if I go into Fricker Center and the parking lot is full of cars, to me, that's not a good sign. That's a bad sign, because the children from Addis Court, Morris Court, wouldn't have cars. They'd be walking them.
Yeah, they'd be right there.
They'd be right there. And so my grandmother worked at Fricker Center for 33 years as a custodian, but she ran all the basketball leagues. She ran all those things. And so I think that people want to have the traditional deliverables of youth development and delinquency prevention programs. But just like you, we gotta go with young people and have a different approach. You know, the methodology that we've had has not worked. I mean, obviously last week we had 3-4 killings, yeah. You know, all in the neighborhood. You know, we probably had 10 to 15 killings all in the neighborhood. We have to really think out of the box. You know, and when people say, well, community centers, they closed Malcolm, but why wouldn't we have, you know, a community school, a community gyms at Warrington Middle or CAYs when the school's open on the weekend, it's open on Sundays, it's open after 5. I mean, that's to how you build that community concept. We don't necessarily need more buildings. We need more programs and more people to just think out the box.
Yeah, because I know there was recently a shooting in Warrington where 3 lives were taken. And I think that's hard to hit any community, because especially with the violence that we have coming in, and the media focuses on really just our communities in the first place, it just paints a picture why they try to push more of us out and bring more of the other genders and ethnic people in. Mm-hmm. And
well, it's also, you've lost the character of the neighborhood. Yeah. I mean, in reality, you're right, that happened on Jackson Street in Myrtle Grove. Those 3 shootings, good thing, you know, I won't call their name, but 2 of those young men played ball for me since they were kids. I've known them. Mm-hmm. Quite frankly, they, Jip, sisters, both still play for me. His little brother plays for me right now. I mean, they'll be in the gym here this afternoon with Coach Palmer in a few minutes on my way where I have to stop. I got to run by there. So we understand, you know, that we just went through a pandemic, but the killing of young black boys in America is an epidemic. Yeah. It's a national health issue. If there was any other ethnic group, if there was any other race of people that was being killed at this rate across this country, it'd be an epidemic. And so we have to, 1, take responsibility for ourselves, 2, institute policies. Everybody, like, I'll say it's so easy to run youth programs. I serve on the Children Trust, and people come with children courts. They come with all these things, getting money. It's great to get little cute boys and girls out of Pensacola Village and Morris Court, and it's cute to get them out of Marina Court. But the reality of it is when that young black boy becomes 15, 16, 17,
yeah.
Life changes.
Yeah.
And then there's nowhere for that child to fall. I mean, because he's going, as you and I talked before the podcast, mental health is real.
Yeah.
When you live in poverty, in the pockets of poverty, when you live with the absence of a father, when you live with a struggling mother, when you see shootings going on, you become immune. And so we have to me, shift our focus. It's great to help the young kids in the community school and elementary. Yeah. But that's great. They're going to be all right.
Yeah.
The problem is happening when a young black boy gets to middle school and high school is, you know, what programs, what hardcore programs, and we have to have tough love, and then we have to have some responsibility.
Yeah.
The truth is, this is a podcast, so it'll be recorded and gone, and so I go on record. I mean, I represent everybody, you know. I got half Democrat, half Republican. I got more non-African-Americans than I have African-Americans that I represent. But African-Americans, we have to have some responsibility on our own.
Yeah.
Now we have to, you know, get rid of that stereotype that snitches end up in ditches. I mean, at the end of the day, there are 4 young black boys who were killed this last week. And no arrest. Yeah. And there are many people in the community that know what happened, but people are afraid to talk until it happens to them.
Yeah.
Until your child is killed, or your brother, your grandson is killed, and that's when you want to talk. And so although we got to hold government accountable, I stand there and say we have to put more resources. That's one of the reasons, you know, I started a summer intern program. I have a summer employment program that you know, we employed 200 or 300 young kids, 90% African Americans. About 27 of those kids have gotten permanent jobs at the county because we have to elevate people out of poverty.
Yeah.
And so if, you know, it ain't rich black kids, it ain't rich white kids, it's majority of poor black kids who sell drugs are killing each other. So I have to give them hope And the hope is when I give them a job and an opportunity. And so if a young man's getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and going to work and he ain't getting off to six, he wants to get a shower, go home, and go to bed.
Yeah.
But when he can hang in the streets and sell dope and have guns, he loses hope. And so, unfortunately, in our community, we've lost hope. And we're just a microcosm of America. Everybody say, oh, this black-on-black crime in Pensacola. You know, if you go to D.C., Chicago, Dallas, Jacksonville, Miami, this is nothing compared to that.
Yeah.
Because it's just a trend. But at the same time, we can break that trend. We can break that cycle. And I think it just happens with programs like this, what you're doing. Spreading the good message that the master has taught. People like Ms. Gibson that's going into these programs and teaching young men, you know, how to do restoration and cut out drywall, teaching them a skill set.
Yeah.
Once a man gets a skill set, you know, he realizes that, you know, for me, like I sell houses, I develop land. When you realize that, you know, you can flip a house and make $100,000, I don't have to sell dope anymore.
Yeah.
But I got to get a taste it. I got to see it. I got to believe it. You know, I don't know it until I can touch it, see it, and feel it.
Yeah.
And the reason I sell dope because I can see it, touch it, and feel it.
I've been in that community the whole time. Until you're exposed to a different reality, you're stuck in the same cycle playing back and forth and back and forth. Because I know, I experienced that when I went into the military.
Yeah.
From being from Pensacola to actually going to Chicago, California, Hawaii, you realize there's more to life than just this street or this
right.
block that you own.
That's right.
Is like the world way bigger.
It's way bigger
and got way more opportunities for you. You just got to go out there and reach out and grab them opportunities and bring them in. Oh, yeah. So, Ms. LeMay, what is the hardest part of your job being, you know, county commissioner?
Dealing with people. I mean, the reality of you can never make everybody happy. Every day of the week, I meet one person mad, I meet one person glad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Most of the time, you never hear the positive, you always hear the negative. You know what? Often I was just in Miami at a conference and with some other black commissioners from across the country. And simply, you know, people want you to be all things all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, I'm a commissioner, I'm not God. I can't change the world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you have to be able to, you want to say, you know, I want to save the world. But you have to accept the limitations of what's been placed before you. And so that's the biggest part, you know, is just letting people understand that although you want to do all things, you can't do all things. You know, and so that's the biggest challenge.
That one gave me goosebumps.
Well, I appreciate you having me. Man, I know I took Coach Williams. Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Man, wait, real quick, before we got to go ahead and close out real quick. Go ahead and sit right down. So, what is the one thing you want to leave these people with before you leave this episode? If you can give them one message, what would that be?
So I think that, you know, I grew up in the same church as Coach Williams, and there's a song, Old Negro Spirit, if I can help somebody as I travel along,
yeah.
If I can help somebody with a word or a song, if I can show some child that he's doing wrong, then all my living wouldn't be in vain. And so at the end, I just hope my life, my service wouldn't be in vain.
Ooh. Now that was a nugget right there. Man, Mr. Mays, I want to say thank you for coming in and coming on this episode from Boys to Men. That's the first episode back. And y'all, we back, we better, and we blessed. I can't do it all on my own. I'm glad I got a team around me finally. So I want to say thank you for coming in and sharing and, you know, putting out a good message. For all those watching, this man is here for the community. Make sure we re-elect this man. This District 3 Commissioner. Hey, like we say always, peace, love, happiness. We is out.
We out.
Better throw some respect on my name. Gotta remind these folks on the daily. Cause I ain't really been myself as lately. My mind's evolving and my heart is changing. Starting to see the world how it should be. It's positively sweet like a half full glass of tea. And I don't know, every day my grandmama pray for me. Hey, and I know exactly what she probably say about me. Give that girl some love, joy.